The next LOS requires us to describe mechanisms that discipline financial reporting quality and the potential limitations of those mechanisms. Each country has its own regulatory body responsible for publicly traded securities and the markets in which they trade. For example, in the United States, the regulatory body is the Securities and Exchange Commission. In the UK, it is the Financial Conduct Authority. The International Organization of Securities Commissions coordinates securities regulation on an international basis with over 200 members, such as national securities regulators, stock exchanges, and regional authorities. One such regional authority, the European Securities and Markets Authority, coordinates policy among the securities regulators of countries in the European Union. Securities regulations typically require a registration process for the issuance of new publicly traded securities, specific disclosure and reporting requirements, including periodic financial statements and accompanying notes, an independent audit of financial reports, a statement of financial condition made by management, a signed statement by the person responsible for the preparation of the financial reports, and a review process for newly registered securities and periodic reviews after registration. Enforcement actions by securities regulators may include fines, suspension of participation in issuance and trading of securities, and public disclosure of the results of disciplinary proceedings. Regulators may also pursue criminal prosecution of fraudulent or otherwise illegal activities. In addition to the audit opinion, a requirement for securities that trade in the United States is that management must include an assessment of the effectiveness of the firm's internal controls. Note that an unqualified or clean audit opinion is not a guarantee that no fraud has occurred, but only offers reasonable assurance that the financial reports, prepared under the direction of management, have been fairly reported with respect to the applicable GAAP. The auditor is selected and paid by the firm being audited. Another source of discipline on financial reporting quality is private contracts, such as those with lenders. Such contracts will often specify how financial measures referenced in the loan covenants will be calculated. The counterparties to private contracts with the firm have an incentive to see that the firm produces high-quality financial reports. The next LOS is to describe presentation choices, including non-GAAP measures that could be used to influence an analyst's opinion. Firms will sometimes report accounting measures that are not defined or required under GAAP. Such non-GAAP measures typically exclude some items in order to make the firm's performance look better than it would using measures defined and required by GAAP. The claim is often made that certain items are excluded because they are one-time or non-operating costs that will not affect operating earnings going forward, because the items are non-cash charges, or to improve comparability with companies that use different accounting methods for depreciation or restructuring charges. In the United States, companies that report non-GAAP measures in their financial statements are required to display the most comparable GAAP measure with equal prominence, provide an explanation by management as to why the non-GAAP measure is thought to be useful, reconcile the differences between the non-GAAP measure and the most comparable GAAP measure, disclose other purposes for which the firm uses the non-GAAP measure, include in any non-GAAP measure any items that are likely to recur in the future, even those treated as non-recurring, unusual, or infrequent in the financial statements. IFRS require that firms using non-IFRS measures in financial reports must define and explain the relevance of such non-IFRS measures and reconcile the differences between the non-IFRS measure and the most comparable IFRS measure. Overall, the supposition is that firms use non-GAAP measures in an attempt to control the metrics on which they are evaluated and to reduce the focus of analysts and investors on GAAP measures. The next LOS is to describe accounting methods, choices, and estimates that could be used to manage earnings, cash flow, and balance sheet items. We will begin with methods concerning revenue recognition. One example of how a firm's choices affect the timing of revenue recognition is the choice of where in the shipping process the customer actually takes title to the goods. A firm may choose terms with their customer of free on board at the shipping point or free on board at the destination. Choosing terms of free on board at the shipping point will mean that revenue is recognized earlier compared to free on board at the destination. Firms can also manage the timing of revenue recognition by accelerating or delaying the shipment of goods. If additional revenue is required to meet targets, firms can offer discounts or special financing terms to increase orders in the current period, or ship goods to distributors without receiving an order. Overloading a distribution channel with more goods than would normally be sold during a period is referred to as channel stuffing. In periods where high earnings are expected, management may wish to delay recognition of revenue to the next period and hold or delay customer shipments to achieve this. In a bill and hold transaction, the customer buys the goods and receives an invoice, but requests that the firm keep the goods at their location for a period of time. The use of fictitious bill and hold transactions can increase earnings in the current period by recognizing revenue for goods that are actually still in inventory. Revenue for future periods will be decreased as real customer orders for these bill and hold items are filled but not recognized in revenue, offsetting the previous overstatement of revenue. Next, we will look at estimates of credit losses. One example of accounting choices that affect financial reports is the estimation of losses from uncollectible customer credit accounts. On the balance sheet, the reserve for uncollectible debt is an offset to accounts receivable. If management determines the probability that accounts receivable will be uncollectible is lower than their current estimate, a decrease in the reserve for uncollectible accounts will increase net receivables reported on the balance sheet, reduce expenses on the income statement, and increase net income. An increase in the allowance for bad debt would have the opposite effect, decreasing net receivables on the balance sheet, increasing expenses, and decreasing net income. A firm that simply underestimates the percentage of receivables that will be uncollectible will report higher receivables and higher net income as a result. At some point, when actual uncollectible accounts exceed the low estimate, the firm will report an additional expense that will reduce net income and net receivables. Management can adjust the bad debt reserve in order to smooth earnings. In periods of high earnings, the allowance for bad debt is increased to reduce reported earnings, in effect storing these earnings for later use. In subsequent periods, if earnings are below benchmark values, the bad debt reserve can be reduced to meet earnings targets. Other reserves recorded by a company, such as a reserve for warranty expense, can also be changed to manage reported earnings. A decrease in the estimated warranty expense as a percentage of sales will increase earnings, while an increase in the reserve for warranty expense will decrease earnings for the period. Another example of a contra account that can be used to manage earnings is a valuation allowance. Recall that a valuation allowance reduces the carrying value of a deferred tax asset based on the probability it will not be realized. Similar to the effects of an allowance for bad debt, increasing a valuation allowance will decrease the net deferred tax asset on the balance sheet and reduce net income for the period, while a decrease in the valuation allowance will increase the net deferred tax asset and increase net income for the period. As with the contra account for bad debt, the valuation allowance can be understated to show higher asset values, and it can also be adjusted over time to smooth earnings. Depreciation methods and estimates can also be used for earnings management. Compared to straight-line depreciation, using an accelerated method of depreciation increases expenses and decreases net income in the early years of an asset's life. In the later years of an asset's life, expenses are lower and net income higher when an accelerated depreciation method is used. The carrying value of a depreciable asset on the balance sheet will decrease more rapidly with accelerated depreciation than with straight-line depreciation. Estimates of the useful life of a depreciable asset and its salvage value upon disposal can also affect net income and the carrying value of the asset. A greater salvage value will slow depreciation, so the carrying value of the asset is greater, depreciation expense is less, and net income is higher. A smaller salvage value will have the opposite effects. If the salvage value of an asset is set higher than the actual sale price at the end of the asset's life, a loss on the sale of the asset will decrease net income in the period in which the asset is sold. Using a longer estimated useful life of a depreciable asset decreases the periodic depreciation expense and increases net income in the early years of the asset's life compared to using a shorter estimated useful life. Management choices and estimates regarding amortization of purchased intangible assets are similar to those for depreciation of tangible assets. The intangible asset goodwill is not amortized but is subject to a test for impairment. By ignoring or delaying recognition of an impairment charge for goodwill, management can increase earnings in the current period. Next, we can examine choices related to inventory. The choice of inventory cost flow method can have significant effects on both reported earnings and the balance sheet value of inventory. Consider the choice between FIFO and weighted average inventory costing methods. During periods of rising prices, cost of sales under the FIFO method will be less than cost of sales under the weighted average costing method. Gross profit, gross margin, and earnings will all be greater under the FIFO method than under the weighted average method as a result. Balance sheet inventory value will be greater under FIFO than under the weighted average method. During periods of decreasing prices, the opposite is true. FIFO cost of sales are greater than weighted average cost of sales, and FIFO gross profits, gross margin, and earnings less than under the weighted average method. With decreasing prices, balance sheet inventory will be less under FIFO than under the weighted average cost method. In terms of relevance, in an environment of either increasing or decreasing prices, FIFO results in more accurate balance sheet inventory values because inventory value is closer to current replacement cost than under the weighted average cost method. Conversely, cost of sales are closer to current or replacement cost under the weighted average cost method so that gross profit and margin better reflect economic reality. Gross profit under FIFO is distorted in that it includes gains from rising prices or losses from decreasing prices, so the weighted average cost method produces better information on the income statement. Financial reports that are transparent and provide users with the information needed to understand how the choice of inventory costing method affects income statement and balance sheet values are considered to be higher quality. Related party transactions can be used to manipulate earnings. If a public firm does business with a supplier that is private and controlled by management, adjusting the price of goods supplied can shift profits either to or from the private company to manage the earnings reported by the public company. We can also examine a company's capitalization decisions. Any expense that can be capitalized creates an asset on the balance sheet and the impact of the expense on net income can be spread over many years. Consider a firm that has a marketing expense of $1.5 million and chooses to capitalize this expense and amortize it over 3 years. In the period in which the expense is incurred, capitalization will reduce the expense on the income statement from $1.5 million to $0.5 million, increasing pre-tax income by $1 million. At the end of the year, the related balance sheet asset is $1 million, and an amortization expense of $0.5 million will be taken in each of the following 2 years. Greater capitalization of research and development costs will shift net income into the current period in the same way. Capitalization also affects cash flow classifications. If an expense is capitalized, the entire amount is classified as an investing cash outflow, so that operating cash flow is increased by that amount. Management can affect the classification of cash flows through other methods, primarily with the goal of increasing reported cash flow from operations. Taking longer to pay suppliers increases operating cash flows and is referred to as stretching payables. Delaying payments that would normally be made near the end of a reporting period until the beginning of the next accounting period will increase operating cash flow in the current period and reduce it in the subsequent period. There is no effect on reported earnings in the current period from stretching payables. Capitalizing interest expense will decrease cash flow from investing and increase cash flow from operations, along with its effects on the pattern of earnings from depreciating the interest expense over time rather than expensing it all in the current period. More generally, the ability under IFRS to classify interest and dividends paid as either CFO or CFF, and interest and dividends received as either CFO or CFI, gives management an additional way to manage reported operating cash flow. Our last LOS for this topic review is to describe accounting warning signs and methods for detecting manipulation of information in financial reports. Following is a list of several warning signs that analysts should look for. The presence of these issues does not indicate fraud or even earnings manipulation, but in each case, the presence of one or more warning signs requires more analysis in order to determine whether there is a real business reason for the item or if earnings manipulation or fraud is driving the decisions and results. Avoiding investment in the company is one alternative when analysts and investors cannot obtain satisfactory answers to the questions raised when multiple warning signs are present. Revenue recognition. Changes in revenue recognition methods. Use of bill and hold transactions. Use of barter transactions. Use of rebate programs that require estimation of the impact of rebates on net revenue. Lack of transparency with regard to how the various components of a customer order are recorded as revenue. Revenue growth out of line with peer companies. Receivables turnover is decreasing over multiple periods. Decreases in total asset turnover, especially when a company is growing through acquisition of other companies. And inclusion of non-operating items or significant one-time sales in revenue. Inventories. Declining inventory turnover ratio. Drawing down inventory levels when LIFO, U.S. GAAP only, inventory costing is used so that cost of sales reflects the lower costs of items acquired in past periods, which increases current period earnings. Capitalization policies. Firm capitalizes costs that are not typically capitalized by firms in their industry. Relationship of revenue and cash flow. The ratio of operating cash flow to net income is persistently less than 1 or declining over time. Other warning signs. Depreciation methods, estimated asset lives, or estimates of salvage values are out of line with those of peer companies in the industry. Fourth quarter earnings show a pattern, either high or low, compared to the seasonality of earnings in the industry or seasonality of revenue for the firm. The firm has significant transactions with related parties, entities controlled by management. Certain expenses are classified as non-recurring but appear regularly in financial reports. Gross or operating profit margins are noticeably higher than are typical for the industry and peer companies. Management typically provides only minimal financial reporting information and disclosure. Management typically emphasizes non-GAAP earnings measures and uses special or non-recurring designations aggressively for charges. Growth by purchasing a large number of businesses can provide many opportunities to manipulate asset values and future depreciation and amortization and make comparisons to prior period earnings problematic. Analysts should consider adjusting prior period earnings when large restructuring or impairment charges are recognized. Analysts sometimes take such events to be good news because they anticipate better firm performance going forward when poorly performing assets are disposed of. Because the charges represent, to some extent, corrections of previously understated expenses and overstated asset values, analysts should consider spreading these costs across prior periods and restating prior earnings to give a more realistic picture of true earnings trends.